Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It's 9 a.m., February 15th, 2023. With me today is co-chair Senator Hoffman, Senator Bishop, Senator Wilson, Senator Merrick, Senator Keel, Senator Olson will be here momentarily. We have one item on the agenda today. We're going to have an update on the federal infrastructure funding. So we'll delve into that. We'll probably have several of these meetings as we go forward, working on capital, as we try to lay all the federal money on these projects for the last couple of years out, so we can, all the members can keep track of what's going on in the public also. So with that, I'd like to ask Mr. Mike Anderson, he's the Acting Infrastructure Investment Coordinator, to come forward, please. And Catherine Keith, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Transportation. And if you, when you start your presentation, maybe you both can give a brief synopsis of your background and how long you've been in your role and why we should pay attention to what you have to say.
For the record, I'm Catherine Keith, Deputy Commissioner of Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for the opportunity to be here and talk about the bipartisan infrastructure law and what it does for transportation in the state. My background is I've been recently appointed Deputy Commissioner as of 2 months ago, so have a little bit of grace, and I'm very grateful to have both James Marks and Dom Pannone, our Administrative Services Director and our Planning and Program Development Director, to help fill in the blanks of any specifics that we can't answer. I've been with the Department of Transportation for about a year and 4 months. I was previously a change management director, largely charged with working with the Alaska Marine Highway System on a transition plan moving forward. And I've lived in rural Alaska for about 25 years in Kotzebue.
For the record, my name is Mike Anderson. I'm the acting infrastructure coordinator in the Office of the Governor, originally from Anchorage. I think I have Deputy Commissioner Beat. I've been in the role for 3 weeks. I took over for Miles Baker, who had a long tenure in this building and is known to many. And so still getting up to speed, so bear with me if I take a lot of questions for the record or willing to get back to you. Before I was in this role, I was still working for the governor as a special assistant, working primarily on public safety and criminal justice related matters. And before that, I spent about 10 years in Washington, D.C., working for the Alaska delegation, Senators Murkowski, Congressman Young, and Senator Sullivan. So that's kind of my background.
And before you start the presentation, just a couple things.
Sure.
Maybe you can tell us about your office and how big it is, and if you're a one-man band or you're a 12-man orchestra.
Yeah, absolutely. So as of now, it is a one-man shop, one-person shop. The legislature, you all last session allocated a $1 million budget for the Office of Infrastructure. I think fully staffed, it'll be in the magnitude of four, looking at four people, a coordinator, a deputy coordinator, a analyst, and a kind of back-end admin type thing. And as of now, it's me and one contractor. We're primarily working on a massive, what we call opportunity tracker, trying to track and run down every opportunity available to primarily the state and outside entities with regards to the IIJA. So as of right now, we're kind of in the beta stages. I mean, we're talking an Excel spreadsheet of close to 1,000 different programs and opportunities.
Okay, and the way, because you're both new here, the way we normally proceed, we'll have you go through the slides, and then at the end of each slide, just pause for a minute, and I'll check the members to see if they have questions, and if they don't, we'll just go on to the next slide, so, and I'll watch the clock. So you guys just concentrate on your presentation, what you want to say, and I'll keep an eye on the committee, and we'll be done it in 2 hours.
Okay.
Okay.
So I'm going to kick it off here and give a federal perspective, kind of just writ large. So in November of 2021, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, or IIJA, it's also known as the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, was signed into law. And it truly is a once-in-a-generation funding package that will address the nation's aging infrastructure. It will modernize our highways and bridges, and it's going to truly revitalize our ferries and our ports. It enhances U.S. competitiveness, creates good jobs, and will grow the economy while making it more sustainable, resilient, and equitable. IIJA includes a five-year reauthorization from the fiscal year 2022 to 2026, and that's, my understanding is that's federal fiscal years, which are, I know, are different than the state fiscal year, of surface transportation programs and direct advanced appropriations. Existing formula funds have an increase in funding or a plus up, while others are discretionary. There are more than a dozen new programs for highways, bridges, transit, and aviation. Just a couple things to tick off here. You'll see in this slide, it's the largest federal investment ever in public transit. It's the largest dedicated bridge investment since the construction of the interstate highway system. And it's the largest investment in clean energy transmission and electric vehicle infrastructure in our nation's history. And really, from Alaska's perspective, this is an opportunity to reshape our infrastructure to support our communities, economies, cultures, and industries.
Go ahead. Keep going.
I have a question.
Okay. We have a question from Senator Hoffman. And let the record reflect Senator Olson's arrival. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under the Federal Highway Administration, the 350, is it contemplated that we're going to see new roads being built?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, yes.
Yeah.
And if so, where and how, what involvement does the legislature have in that process of designation?
For the record, Catherine Keith. Thank you for the question, Senator Hoffman. If the question is, are we going to see new road construction as a result of this infrastructure bill funding? And the answer is yes. We have a capital program that includes significant construction, and we look forward to getting into some of those details with this committee, and we can share some of what that will look like in distribution across the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions on the slide? Next slide, please.
So this slide really shows kind of when the drafters of this legislation, and the backstory is it was originally hatched in the Senate. It was five Republicans, five Democrats, with Senator Murkowski playing a very lead role at the negotiating table. But it was kind of the themes, if you will, of the bill. While it was, you know, hard dollars, the theme and kind of the way that they looked at this once in a generation opportunity were in the following buckets, if you will: safety, climate, economic strength, equity, transformation, and workforce. And if you marry kind of Alaska's needs with that, in terms of especially when it relates to the discretionary and competitive opportunities that the state, tribes, municipalities, nonprofits are going to have, we stack up really well when it relates to these buckets, because the kind of sub focus there is, you know, with our vast, you know, with our large amount of tribes, with our historically underserved communities, with the impact climate has had on our state, rural disadvantaged communities and minority low-income populations are all taken into account when this bill was created, and I think will be taken into account as a lot of these discretionary awards are doled out here in the next several years.
Go ahead. Keep going. I'll stop you.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Just pause for a second, and we'll cue you right up if there's a question.
Appreciate it. So this slide really just shows the myriad of IIJA programs and the different eligibilities that will ultimately empower local governments, tribes, to apply for discretionary grants. I know DOT will talk about it probably in a little greater detail, but I know they're finding new ways to partner with entities such as Southeast Conference and the Prince William Sound Economic Development District to seek out new ways to support communities interested in pursuing these once-in-a-generation funds with project management and engineering support. I'd make a plug for AML as well. I know that AML has partnered with DOT. They have a MOU or an MOA, one of those acronyms. Mm-hmm. And really, it's I feel really proud sitting here, and it's only been a couple weeks, but proud of just the collaboration that you're seeing amongst the state from all different stakeholders to really really try and take advantage and capitalize of this. You'll hear me say it probably another 10 times, once in a generation type of investment into our state. So this is a little bit more detailed slide. It's the U.S. Department of Transportation's Federal Highway Administration announced that it released $59.9 billion nationwide in fiscal year 2023 for apportionments for formula funds, formula programs to support investment in critical infrastructure to include roads, bridges, tunnels, carbon emission reductions, and safety improvements. This slide shows 5 years of the six original federal aid highway apportionment programs, which are the National Highway Performance Program, the Surface Transportation Block Grants, the Highway Safety Improvement Program, the Congestion Mitigation and Air Quality, or CMAQ, the National Highway Freight Program, and then the final two are brand spanking new, and that's the PROTECT Program, which stands for Promoting Resilient Operations to for Transformative, Efficient, and Cost-Saving Transportation. Yeah, it's a mouthful. And then also the Carbon Reduction Program. But this the top right just shows kind of the increases in all of all of those existing programs. Those are the increases from what had been previously funded. This next slide is related to the Federal Transit Administration, and there's up to $108 billion in this in IIJA was allocated for public transit over a five-year span, which is a 30% increase to authorize funding levels along with the discretionary grants. And in this FTA kind of thing, this is where the recent Alaska Marine Highway Ferry Award came out of. And I know – I believe Deputy Commissioner will be talking about that in a little bit greater detail as it relates to the match and that. But just wanted to flag that's where this is coming from. So you'll see new grants for electric or low emission ferry pilot program. You have the ferry service for rural communities, 30% increase to program funding levels in urban areas, 30% in rural areas, 30% increase to program funding levels. For FY21 to FY22, and a 30% increase in grants.
Question from Senator Bishop.
Good morning. Welcome to committee. Good to see you again. I was just reading the note on the bottom of this slide, and this funding is just for fiscal year 22, state nationwide competitive grant. Is that correct?
Yeah, for the record, Catherine Keith, Senator Bishop, that's correct.
I just want everybody don't get excited. We're not going to get $300 million in new rail cars in Alaska Railroad this year.
Thank you for pointing out.
Yeah.
I think we want to pick the pace up a little bit, too. This isn't new to us. So.
Yes, sir. So next we have a slide just on nationally FAA funding. Under IIJA, airports in Alaska are expected to receive approximately $392 million over 5 years. The funding will address airside and landside needs at airports, such as improving runways, taxiways, and airport-owned towers, terminal development projects, noise reduction projects. And in addition, there's $5 million nationwide that will be discretionary. And I think with that, I'm going to turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Keith.
For the record, Catherine Keith. So we all know that for years, Alaska's infrastructure has struggled to keep up with the needs, the investment to match the needs across the state. When nationwide, there was a lot of investment happening. Along the interstates, we were still dealing with the 1964 earthquake. And our rating across the state for Alaska is C minus, according to the American Society of Civil Engineers. So we're aware as an agency of the amount of work that's ahead of us and grateful for this opportunity to make some headway. And we've been looking as an agency over the past year about how we can do this strategically, looking at some of the key priorities that are being addressed federally, looking at what that means for our state, and then looking across all modes of Alaska and all regions to understand how we can equitably really move the needle on some of these key priority areas with the funding opportunities and their criteria. So there's a bit of a matching that happens behind the scenes. So what this slide goes into a little bit of detail about is with our different funding sources, year by year, you can see the increases from our Federal Highways Program, FAA, and FTA. And combined, we went from $830 million in 2020, notwithstanding the relief that you see in 2021, to over $1 billion in IIJA apportionments.
So one of the concerns the committee has is inflation and eroding our ability to do any new projects versus what we had on the books or targeted in 19 and 20. So there was a lot of optimism when this first came out, soon to be deflated with the inflation cycle. So in your presentation, it'd be nice to address some of those concerns as you pick the slides you want to talk about that with.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. We have a question from Senator Bishop.
Just Mr. Chairman, along with your comments, good morning. If you could also to dovetail on the chairman's comments, if you got any knowledge of project awards that have been let in the last month, have you seen any project escalation costs from the engineer's estimate to the final bid award? Thank you.
Go ahead and continue.
Thank you. This slide in front of us goes through program by program, the amount of increases. And you can see there's a few programs specifically where federally they increased the amount of apportionment by program. Many of these are formula programs, which DOT does receive annually. And the increases you can see are with the National Highway Performance Program, NHPP. We see an increase of 41.9%. And we also see big increases in funding for our new programs with the PROTECT program and the Carbon Reduction Program. The graph to the right addresses some of the questions about inflation. You can see the first column is what we were receiving with the FAST Act funding, and that was Fixing America's Surface Transportation funding. So that sets a baseline of where we would have been without the Inflation Reduction Act, the IIJA funding. And then on the right, you can see where we're at today because of our influx of funding. And as I understand it, to the chair, Stedman's question about the inflation is that the IIJA is currently looking at adding an inflation factor to the funding, but I'd like to request that James Marks come up to see if he has an update on whether or not that's something that we'll see.
Mr. Marks, mm-hmm. Jump in the hot seat, introduce yourself for the record and tell the committee why we should be happy that it's all inflation-proof.
Good morning. For the record, I'm James Marks, Planning and Program Development Director for Alaska DOT. The Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, or IIJA, did account for inflation, but not at the rate that we're seeing. So statutorily, it does factor in a growth rate. Usually it's around a 2.4% year over year. So we will see increases each year. The rate of inflation nationally and within the state, however, it is outpacing that. It is slowing from where it was a year ago, but it is still outpacing that. So I think to the point, will these funds not be able to purchase or procure as much. Yes, that's a very real concern. And we're looking at ways to mitigate that, but it's not even, it's not across the board. You know, steel, things with long lead times, the Buy America and Build America is having, those new rules are having nominal effects on inflation as well.
And as part of the question that Senator Bishop asked, we've been notified even of last year that a lot of the projects were up 20-25%, which is significantly higher than the growth of inflation. So it's something we want to pay attention to here as we go forward and try to select the projects. Go ahead and continue.
Second. For the record, Catherine Keith. Regarding the cost, the aspect of cost increases, we are seeing significant increases, sometimes twice as much as the engineer's estimate, and we are having to go back to federal highways in numerous instances to request additional funding to address those increases. So I was hoping to ask Mr. Marks again to address kind of what the process has been like for getting some of those increases approved and what we're doing to accommodate that.
Mm-hmm. For the record, James Marks. It's certainly a challenge. So we heard earlier in the year from the Association of General Contractors that our typical way of estimating just isn't going to cut it anymore. Looking back in time and looking at, you know, specific bid items, going through our scope, schedules, and estimates. So it is a challenge when it comes to how do we estimate, you know, for this world of kind of unknowns. We've heard reported through AGC that they're seeing cost escalation, you know, in excess of 20% nationwide. That being said, as I kind of alluded to, but it's not even across the board. So some projects are coming in, you know, significantly higher, 20, 30, 40%, you know, over our engineers' mm-hmm. estimates. Sometimes that's due to capacity, you know, industry's capacity. If we only have one person bidding in an area, those things are coming higher. Alternatively, we are seeing some come in below engineers' estimates. So we're still grappling with what that looks like in terms of how we manage that. There's our statewide transportation improvement program, the STIP, that does require us to go through amendment processes with federal highways to account for these increases. So there is a delay in being able to address some of these things. And if there's any clarification, I'd be happy to.
Okay. Go ahead and continue.
So as I mentioned earlier, we've been looking strategically, and for the record, Catherine Keith, at how we can move the needle across key areas of interest for the state in transportation. And when this opportunity first became available back in September of 2021, we did launch a big public engagement effort to listen to people across the state. We received over 3,000 comments about what our communities felt they needed most, and that's what we see represented here on the screen. So our communities, they want safe and secure transportation. They want a healthy and thriving multimodal transportation system, and so that's where economic vitality comes in. And for Alaska, that means focusing on how we can increase tourism, our commercial fishing, and of course freight, so that we can lower the cost of goods both for day-to-day living and for project development. Our state of good repair, while that's not necessarily what the public calls it, they just want our roads and our bridges and other assets to be maintained in good condition. And resiliency is now becoming more important by the day, as we saw with the West Coast Alaska storm that impacted a lot of residents on the coast. And resiliency along all of Alaska's waterways provides us with the opportunity to build long-lasting communities, barge landings, and other port infrastructure. And then lastly is sustainability. Our communities want to have a place that they can live for generations to come, and that's not just environmental sustainability, but this is where equity falls in as well for us. and a bit of economic development as well. There are other things that we needed to add in our capital program beyond just what it takes to build projects, and that's where you'll see some money in for organizational improvements, and that's for workforce development and training and some of the planning that happens. There are projects that are just hard to categorize, and there's needs that just don't fit into these boxes, and that's where we have an other as our agency works through, you know, what these definitions mean both for ourselves and for the state. And while these aren't driving our direction as a state moving forward, it's really helpful to communicate to committees like yourselves where it is that we're focusing our resources, and resources go beyond funding. It also means just the time of our staff and how we're allocating our consultant resources. So we can talk for a minute about safety. There's a number of programs within IIJA that specifically address safety. This is one of USDOT's top priorities. So you'll hear them talk frequently about this and what they're doing to move the needle on safety. And so over 5 years, Alaska is going to receive about $15 million in formula funding for highway safety traffic programs focused on improving driver behavior and reducing deaths and injuries from motor vehicle-related crashes. So this is about a 30% increase from funding in previous years. There's other ways beyond the state agency where we can get funding for this across the state, and local and tribal governments are eligible to receive the new Safe Streets and Roads for All funding. And this fiscal year, we had about $2.6 million awarded to Alaskan communities to develop it's an action plan for them, things that they can do locally to advance towards this Vision Zero to reduce crashes and fatalities. One of the programs that we've launched to help support this is both a safety program, and it's also for economic vitality. In order to be able to move some of the funding that we're getting, the increased formula funding, we've developed programs such as our Safe Ice Roads for Alaskans, or CIRA. So this year we've awarded approximately $2 million to 10 different communities. We have memorandums of agreement with most of these communities at this point. Awards had been made, and then some construction is happening of these ice roads. These are really critical projects in rural Alaska to help move freight and goods, and significantly can reduce the cost of living. Thank you. The next area to touch upon is in economic vitality. And for Alaska, this is focused on what transportation does to improve freight, fishing, and tourism. And as we know, the seafood industry employs a lot of workers across Alaska, and our freight corridors have 46% of imported and exported commodities by weight, over 1,200 miles of designated freight corridors in Alaska. What we've been looking at as an agency is how much have we been investing into the waterways across the coastline, and are we doing a sufficient job at maintaining that infrastructure given how much we rely upon our ports and harbors across the state. A lot of the funding that you're seeing in IIJA, those eligibilities are for ports and harbors, and not only ports and harbors themselves, but how we can do so while reducing emissions and air quality so that the communities don't have the diesel fumes that are creating health concerns. So there's a lot of environmental criteria that's listed in all of our port infrastructure programs. One of them is the PIDP. This is a big program for a lot of communities in Alaska. It's run through MARAD, which is a USDOT program. We did receive some MARAD program this year for the communities in Prince William Sound for terminals there for the Alaska Marine Highway System. And I know there's a number of communities that are looking into this program again this year.
Mm-hmm. Okay, before you go to the next slide, maybe help me a little bit on the harbors. We have turned over the vast majority of our harbors to the local cities and boroughs, and then have helped them with matching money, rebuild them. So does the communities qualify for this, or are you just referencing stuff or harbors or ports or docks that are owned by the state?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Chair Stedman. For the record, Catherine Keith, yeah, that is 100% correct. A lot of our local ports and harbors are owned by municipalities or port authorities or boroughs. So this is a good example of where we like to partner with the local government in order to support their needs. Because as a transportation agency, whether or not we own our assets, we're trying to support transportation across the state because that's we have the ability and expertise to do so. These Prince William Sound Economic Development District proposals for PIDP, they were the ones that submitted the proposals and received the funding, and the state offered support through engineering and some match to be able to partner together towards this. We're seeing, and AML has been helping us with this, Alaska Municipal League is identifying who is the strongest applicant moving forward. Sometimes the department itself is a strong applicant, and sometimes it's the local governments that are. And where that's the case, we like to empower the local communities to put forward the projects for submission.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Senator Bishop.
Yes, thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Is this is there a maximum amount on the Port Infrastructure Grant Program by participant?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Bishop, yes, there is a maximum. The total funding, I would have to get the specifics. As I recall, it's roughly 28 million this year, but I'm going to get
back. It's on the next slide.
Oh.
I just wanted to make, I didn't know if you were capping the, I got a little bit ahead of myself, but I'm sorry, but if you were capping it by community.
Maybe go to the next slide and present that, and that might answer his question.
Yeah, thank you. So, Senator Bishop, the Port Infrastructure Development Program is run by MARAD as a discretionary grant program, and that is capped at a certain dollar amount, and they just released the notice of funding opportunity a few days ago, and the eligibilities are slightly different than they were before, so we can get specifics to you on the funding for what that is, but it's pretty significant. The communities can make some major improvements on their port infrastructure through that program, but it is highly competitive and focused on moving goods. So if anyone is interested in applying for that program, we're happy to offer some support and guidance.
Senator Bishop.
If the chair, that we could just send it to the boss, to the Chair Stedman, he'll get it to us.
Could you repeat that? I didn't catch it.
Your follow-up, if you'll just bring it to the chair, he'll distribute it to us.
Yes, that's how it works. We'll distribute it out amongst the committee members. So dealing with these port expansions, we have a lot of private ports paid for by private enterprise, not subsidized by the state and a lot of our communities. So do they qualify for any of this funds if they wanted to expand their container storage ability or what have you? Or does it have to be a municipality?
Yeah, for the record, Catherine Keith. Yeah, so Chair Stedman, there is a lot of expanded eligibilities through MARAD programs, and it may not be the PIDP program that private industry does apply for, but there are others for shipyard improvement programs where private industry can apply and is eligible for significant improvements, especially equipment upgrades. So I would encourage us to look at that because it's a great opportunity for a lot of our private industry along the coast.
Mm-hmm. And the state owns a shipyard also. All right. Okay. Next slide, please.
Yeah. For the record, Catherine Keith. And on the topic of state of good repair and shipyards, our Vigor Shipyard in Ketchikan is very interested in our port improvement programs and has a great list added for things that they can be applying for. So, in the very least, fingers crossed. So with State of Good Repair, the State of Alaska Transportation Department has a Transportation Asset Management Program, or TAMP, where we do quantify how our bridges and pavement are doing, what the health of our transportation system is. And we have other assets across the state with our public facilities and our ferry systems and terminals. We're working as an agency to unify how we're looking at all of our assets. There's significant funding in IIJA to support improving the reliability of our transportation network. And that includes about $3.7 billion over 5 years in federal highway formula funding for highways and bridges. We can also compete for about $15.8 billion in Bridge Investment Program, which is a national discretionary grant program that we are eligible for. And these really help to support economically significant bridges. Another new program that our agency is excited to announce this year is our Community Bridge Program. So this is in support of local governments that maybe own their own infrastructure, tribally owned bridges or local roads, culvert repair. So this helps communities to be able to apply for this funding. We'll be releasing a notice of funding opportunity within this first quarter. That'll be through the end of March. And we'll expect to have about $54 million available for communities to apply.
Okay. We'll have a brief at ease. Back on the record. Thank you. Thank Senator Wilson. Do you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The $54 million, about how many projects does the department plan to award, and about how many communities?
Yeah, for the record, Catherine Keith, through the chair, Senator Wilson, we look forward to seeing the applications. I think that's what it's going to depend on, is the quality of applications and the readiness of the projects and whether or not they meet the federal funding. So we haven't set out in advance the number of projects or the number of communities, but look forward to seeing the applications as they come in.
I guess. Well, what? As a follow-up, 54 doesn't seem like a large number to really serve many communities in terms of bridge replacement type projects. So just look forward to seeing the applications submitted after the in March.
Any other questions on the slide? Okay, Nick, we got Senator Bishop.
Thank you. To Senator Wilson's question, that's just for one quarter. Is that correct? That's not over the 5-year life.
Yeah, through the chair to Senator Bishop. This is for 2 years of funding, and we'll release this notice of funding opportunity every 2 years. And so 2 years of funding.
Okay. Next slide, please.
On the topic of sustainability, many people I'm sure are aware of the high value that the IIJA funds do place on sustainability, climate resiliency, and air quality. These programs are listed here. Many of them are new, including the Carbon Reduction Program, the National Electric Vehicle Formula Program, known as NEVI, our Reductions of Truck Emissions and Port Facilities Program, and Charging and Fueling Infrastructure Program. There's also the Reconnecting Communities Pilot Program, which helps to ensure equitable local transportation for communities that have been divided with construction of major roads or highways or rail systems. So my background is actually a renewable energy engineer, so this is a topic that's pretty interesting to me. We can see the benefit of getting off of diesel fuel in rural communities at times. It can make a lot of economic sense. So it'll be interesting with some of these programs across Alaska to see how we can leverage them to increase the resiliency of our transportation system. The NEVI program, and one is particular that we're excited about because we partner with the Alaska Energy Authority in the implementation of this program. They're the lead agency on this. And if there's no other questions on this slide, I can go on.
Go ahead and continue.
The Alaska Energy Authority will be releasing an RFP for this program. With the NEVI program, there's $52 million for 5 years We will be releasing a NOFO that represents 2 years of funding for the NEVI program. And this is a very specific targeted program to create an alternative fuel corridor. And for Alaska, that'll be from Fairbanks to Anchorage at first. And when we build out that corridor, we can expand it beyond that. And this investment can go into other areas across the state. For the first 2 years, in order to build out this alternative fuel corridor, the charging stations need to be in that area, so we can't yet use this funding to support our rural communities that are interested in these funds.
Mm-hmm. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Similar question as to the bridges, I guess, is how many projects does the state plan to hopefully, as I understand it's all about grantees, but and then you mentioned sort of working on a corridor of projects to make sure there's a connectivity and spot, so they're not all in Homer, but you can't get to Anchorage or vice versa, or going to Fairbanks. So just, is the state working with these local communities to have a sort of a distribution of stations throughout the state?
Through the chair to Senator Wilson, yes, the Alaska Energy Authority and our department have launched a pretty extensive engagement campaign with communities specifically around the electric vehicle charging programs. And with this first round of funding that'll go out this quarter, there'll be approximately 5 to 7 awards. And it may not be to communities specifically, but it could be to infrastructure owners along the side of a highway that are able to maintain and operate these charging stations. And the communities have other ways to engage with the program and request funding, and there's a discretionary grant opportunity as well. The charging stations are definitely not cheap. They require probably $1 million per location to build them out. So there'll be a number of awards that are granted. Once we address the requirements of the program, then we can expand to rural other areas across the state.
Mm-hmm. Well, what?
Thank you. With about $1 million to install, what's the annual maintenance on these? And are we making sure those awardees can continue the maintenance as well?
Through the chair to Senator Wilson. Yeah, the maintenance on these is not as significant as the upfront capital cost. For now, this federal funding does allow for funds to go towards operations and maintenance, which is a little unique for this program. For Alaska, the electric charging stations are not necessarily a revenue-generating opportunity, and so we're currently talking about the contracts that we can be developed. This is a nationwide conversation about how we can partner with private industry on these projects. Some of this is underway, and it'll have to understand what will work for are the entities that are applying and what they need in order to maintain these in the long term.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Deputy Commissioner, I understand if you need to get back to the committee on this, but that's a surprising price tag. I think a level three charger is $50,000-$60,000. Here in my community, local government and private businesses have installed quite a few as a convenience to their customers and citizens. Are we installing these very, very far from existing three-phase power? Are we installing 10 per location? How do we get to $1 million?
Yeah, through the chair to Senator Keel, that is a great question. It's definitely an approximation. The level, we are required to install 4 level 3 chargers, and they need to have broadband and the electrical infrastructure in order to maintain the fast charging requirements. So while $1 million is probably a high approximation, it is rather significant price tag to build out within the mile of the interstate or the freeway the highway that it's required to.
Mm-hmm. So help me a little bit so we get a grant and we build these electrical charging stations, then the state of Alaska picks up the maintenance of these going forward?
Yeah, thank you for the question. For the record, Catherine Keith. Yeah, Chair Stedman, the maintenance and operations will ideally be on the private entities that have entered into an agreement with the state. So it is not the direction of AEA or DOT that we would be maintaining and operating the equipment, but the agreements inherent in the implementation of the awards is that the private entities would be maintaining that, not the state.
Okay. Senator Merritt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you have any idea how many electric vehicles are in the state?
Yeah, through the chair to Senator Merrick. There's not very many. Yeah, where you can get those numbers specifically, it's in the hundreds. They expect massive increase, though, nationwide because of all of the rebates in the Inflation Reduction Act on electric vehicles. There is a lot of interest in the state of Alaska for this infrastructure, and we haven't had the infrastructure here to allow for the vehicles to work well. And so it's going to be a curve over the next 5 years where this is going to become something that's more available to Alaskans. At this point, it's a very small percentage of number across the state, and we can get you some specifics as to where that's at today.
Thank you very much.
So when you get back to the committee on the amounts, if you can identify the location also, clearly there's a difference in having a electric car in a warmer part of the state and flatter ground than in a colder part of the state and hillier ground. So it'd be interesting to see how they're going to work in Fairbanks at 40 below. And maybe you could, in your answer, if there's any research or information on that, get back to the committee on where these should be targeted, the location should be targeted.
Yeah. So for the record, Catherine Keith, Chair Stedman, there's a lot of research about the efficiency of batteries in cold climates, especially up in the Fairbanks area. The Alaska Center for Energy and Power has done a number of studies. There is a reduction of efficiency. And I could love to talk about this for hours and entertain questions about it. But there is a efficiency loss. Owners are still finding it to be economically viable to them as individuals. However, there's a lot of challenges with our utility rate structure that makes it even more difficult. We don't have a unanimous way of addressing kind of the surcharge across the state with our utilities. So we have a number of things to look at to make this a viable solution that will be adopted more broadly, but we are working through those things.
Yeah, so I think the committee would also be interested in the source of the energy. Mm-hmm. If it's the coal-burning plant, Fairbanks, or a hydro in Southeast, or natural gas and out of Cook Inlet, or diesel generators, they'll have different emission issues. So we'd be interested in the generation at the locations of where this development's going to be. Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, the good news is Fairbanks already has power to all the parking spots.
Yes. Go ahead and continue.
For the record, Catherine Keith. Resiliency is an important topic for a lot of rural Alaska. The new PROTECT program is specifically to support local roads with increased resiliency. This is coastal shore protection, the building of berms, and in building up embankments. And there's other uses for this funding, like increased culvert size other than what we may normally design for. And this is a program that we're going to be relying on to help us address some of the repairs from the West Coast Alaska storm. And there's been other changes as a result of the bipartisan infrastructure law to emergency relief funding, which gives us a little bit more time before from when we declare an emergency, such as we did out in Nome, to when we have to have a work completed on our emergency repairs. So the PROTECT program itself allows us to focus on communities with twice hit assets and any at-risk coastal communities. We've been keeping a close eye on this program because of the West Coast Alaska storm damages, which I'm going to address on this next slide here. You know, across the state, there were over 35 communities that were impacted. And the damages that we've assessed over the fall time are over $210 million.
We'll just finish your slide and I'll come back to this question.
This is over a combination of assets, including our airports, our Fed aid roads in Nome and Teller, and then also community infrastructure with their the berms and locally owned roads. A great team of people across DMVA, Department of Transportation, and others are working at how we can complete these repairs by this summer. The PROTECT program will be a big support for this, as will the Federal Highways Emergency Relief Funding.
Great. Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Ms. Keith, on 20, I didn't get in the queue fast enough. I had the question, but are our river communities eligible to apply for this erosion control?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, yes, our riverine communities are absolutely able to apply for this. Another thing that we're working to support our riverine communities and their barge landies, especially, is by applying through MARAD for a route designation, which will make them part of America's marine highway system. And that's a designation that the South Coast communities do have, and it does increase their eligibility for funding for such things as barge landings. But up until now, it's stopped at the Aleutian Chain. So we do have an application in that will go all the way north along the coast of Alaska and our main navigable waterways through our main river system. So we're excited to have that through, and I think it'll help with funding into those communities.
Okay, Senator Hoffman and Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If this is a five-year total, and you have these five categories, I could see the at-risk coastal community protection referred to by Senator Bishop as erosion control could eat up 10 or 20 times the amount of the funding here. So are we putting out signals of false expectations to those communities that are at risk? Because with climate change, there are tens, if not hundreds, of communities that are being affected by erosion control and climate change.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, absolutely. The need is extreme. It's partly why I wanted to share the slide with this committee about the West Coast storm, because for 1 year, those communities along the coast, not even including all of the other damages to other communities, is significant. Over 200 million. And if you look at all of the needs for coastal and riverine erosion, it's a lot. So as an agency, we are looking at how we can address some of these concerns and support communities with that. So we would hope not to raise false expectations, but just develop a team that can look at that and figure out how we can help address some of these funding concerns. There's a lot.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On your next slide, on 21, you have the estimation is $210 million for the damages for the storms. And just wondering how much from insurance and FEMA costs does the state plan to get reimbursed from that? And how soon would you be able to go out and survey the other 10 communities?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, yeah, those are great questions. Right now, we have in the fall did thorough assessments of the 26, like you saw, but we couldn't get to all of them because the freeze up and snow came too quickly. So we will be going back out to those communities this spring as soon as we're able to finish doing any assessments. Our main concern was to get out there and collect data as a baseline as much as possible so that the communities would be eligible to receive reimbursement through FEMA. If they were found to be eligible expenses. So our conversations right now with DMVA are looking at all of the assets that had been damaged and understanding who owns those assets, and then what agency can we work with to get reimbursement. And that's a very complicated puzzle, to be honest. And so conversations are ongoing about that. And like Senator Olson will recall that even in Gullivan, our Department of Transportation was working on houses because of the need out there at the time. And we had a contractor there. So we worked with Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to get the work done. But at the end of the day, you know, where that revenue is coming from to pay for those expenses is always a challenge. So looking forward into the summer, that's what we're doing right now very actively is working with communities who submitted their request for public assistance with FEMA. And if they're eligible, we'd like to work on a bundling approach so that our agency can support communities with getting the construction done rapidly, but then also address if there's airport damage, working with FAA, and if there's local roads that are on the inventory, working with BIA and then with Protect and Federal Highways on local roads. So it's an interesting challenge, but one that needs to get done this summer.
Follow-up?
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. I guess I'm looking for maybe does DOT have a percentage of sort of reclaiming goal that they're looking for? I mean, obviously it's going to be the max that you can get, but do you guys have a goal in mind that 50% of the cost would be reimbursed by other partners and other agencies, 70%, 10%?
Through the chair to Senator Wilson, I would expect 100% would be our goal. And some of the eligibilities through FEMA are about 90%. Some of the eligibilities with our PROTECT program are 80%. So there's going to be a patchwork of funding.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
So we had a lot of fellow Alaskans that had their homes destroyed and damaged in this big storm. And FEMA's coming in to help the communities. So I'd like to get back to the committee. I'd like to see what restrictions FEMA's going to want to put on these communities. Because my experience with FEMA in Southeast, dealing with the insurance side of it, is they want the development off the shorefront. They do not count rock fills. They don't want you on pilings. They want you off the waterfront. So, I guess the concern is, you know, what is FEMA's role going to be or policy impacts FEMA is going to put on the state to come in and do this assistance? Because my understanding, to get your house insured, you've got to deal, if you're in a flood zone, you've got to deal with all the regulations. So can you help me with that?
For the record, Catherine Keith. Yes, Senator Stedman, that is a good question and a challenge. So through our department, we work with DMVA in order to communicate back and forth through FEMA. So that's our state agency that helps with these conversations. The FEMA has their individual assistance program where they work with homeowners in situations like that. And there's not much current interaction that our agencies have to support the communities with their individual assistance requests, such as the unique housing situation. So that would be something it would be good to be paying attention to, and I can take that back to our team to see if there's something that we can do to support that. On the public assistance side, where we're talking about a large number of homes, as was the case in Gullivan, or any of the other infrastructure damage, we're working to ensure that their guidance can support fast deployment of construction versus, you know, we typically understand that it's going to be a while before they can get out to the communities and do their assessments and then go through the typical reimbursement process. So that's where part of our conversations with the DMVA and others are about not just who's going to fund the projects, but when and how we can get commitments and still get construction and critical repair work done this summer. So some of the policies that FEMA is making, we're having conversations about how to best support the communities. But we haven't been talking as much about individual homes and some of the restrictions that they're going to have. And
I would highly recommend that. Because after the damage in the Gulf Coast several years ago, some of us on an energy meeting took a helicopter ride
And there is vast neighborhoods that are still empty today. They're not allowed to build back along the coast. You see asphalted subdivisions with cul-de-sacs and sidewalks, and there's no houses in there. So there is a concern of the impact that FEMA is going to have on our the communities, and they're blocking the rebuilding of these. So we need to understand that. And not only in Western Alaska, Norton Sound and Bristol Bay and on up the coast, but down in Prince William Sound and Southeast also, in Kodiak. Because my understanding is it's a nationwide policy and nationwide calculated premiums. And to ignore that, I think, is we'd be ignoring that with our own peril. And if there's any financial federal, my understanding, if there's any financial federal funding of these homes or the banks being allowed to or being able to sell their mortgages in a secondary market, they can't do that without complying with FEMA and the flood insurance. And I'd also like you to get back to the committee on the claims paid by FEMA on flood insurance versus the versus the premiums collected. The Division of Insurance will have a lot of that data at their fingertips. And you're going to be shocked at what you see the Alaskans pay in premiums compared to what they collect. So if you can get that back to the committee, because we are concerned of the potential restrictions FEMA may put on our communities. So any other questions on this one? Okay, we'll go on to slide 22.
And for the record, Catherine Keith, the comments of Senator Stedman make me grateful that our infrastructure coordinator is here, Mr. Anderson, because a lot of the things that we're facing across Alaska right now are very integrated. Our infrastructure system is not just our roads anymore. It's community buildings, our infrastructure is our housing, it's broadband, it's our utility corridors. So it's so integrated. It's great to have the support to help us figure out how to pull these different agencies together. So I think what we're seeing is that's what it's going to take to help move the needle on some of these concerns. This is the slide that we're looking at right now is looking at geographic areas. So often when you are presented with information by our agency, it's by the regions, central, northern, and our south coast region. Our teams have been looking at our capital program also by area, including rural corridor waterways, urban areas, and then some of our programs are just statewide. So it's been interesting for us to understand, you know, where there's areas of underinvestment and where we feel we're hitting the mark on. And so this is more conceptual just to help understand some of the DOT processes as we're looking at the IIJA funding and looking ahead at the next 5 years where we may want to set targets. So this is kind of a start of a conversation of what we want to see across the state.
So can you help me on this one a little bit, where Southeast would fall in this versus areas like Bristol Bay or you know, the North Slope, or can you help me with that?
Yeah, for the record, Catherine Keith. Senator Stedman, the one that's very easy is the waterways. Anything that's riverine in nature, coastal projects specifically, not just coastal communities. We're categorizing that as waterway. That would be our ports, harbors, barge landings, our marine highway system investments. Those are waterways. As you get into the rural classification, that becomes a little bit more challenging as an agency. How do we define things as rural? Is it by population? Is it by traffic? Is it by location on or off the road? So Southeast Community Projects, like Ketchikan, South Tongass, for example, that would be considered a rural project because it's not necessarily connected to the road system, and the costs of bringing goods into that community are going to be similar to what we may see in other like rural hubs. The corridor projects include some of our main highway projects, such as the Seward Highway, 98.5 to 118 Bird Creek Project, or the Glen Highway. Those are their corridor projects. And whereas urban tends to be more of our municipal areas, projects that are, you know, in downtown Anchorage or Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Question, Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Deputy Commissioner Keith, SOGR, what is that?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Bishop, that's State of Good Repair. I'm sorry for the acronym.
Thank you.
Yes. Next slide, please.
As Mr. Anderson mentioned earlier, our agency's been really, has been relying on our partnerships with others. That includes other state agencies, businesses, such as Alaska, ACEC is Alaska, Alaska Consortium of Consultants. It's our consultant advocacy group, and other agencies such as Alaska Municipal League and Southeast Conference. When we're putting together proposals for discretionary grants, there's just a lot of engagement that we want to make sure happens, and that we're applying for projects in a way that's community-driven. And one of the ways that we're helping to focus on community-driven planning is through these rural planning organizations. And this is a form of our MPOs, which is a municipal planning organization. Our rural planning organizations allow some of our non-urban areas to form a planning organization where they can develop what their transportation improvement project list is, and they can put that forward to our agency as it goes into our queue of projects. So it helps to have more regional control over what projects they see are needed in the area. They get some planning funds from DOT to do their own planning, and we're excited to see these begin to unfold across the state. At this point, we have one and possibly two signed, with a number of others along the way.
Senator Keel, then Senator Bishop, then Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this may be a question for Mr. Anderson. These partnerships are a great development and an excellent expansion of the way DOT especially has worked historically. I think they're going to help us find a lot of worthy projects. Can you maybe take a half step back and talk to us about how big the rush is? We talk about this as once in a generation. We know it's a five-year bill. We also know that federal programs sometimes take a while. Should everybody be spinning as fast as they can to be first in the door in the next 5 years with everything permitted and ready to bid? Or do we, can we afford a little bit more contemplative approach?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, it's been my understanding that it is a five-year window of monies to various entities, state nonprofits, municipalities, et cetera, with more of a 10-year runway in terms of getting the projects to development.
Okay.
So five years of allocated monies coming in with more of a 10-year glide slope.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Keith. Under your business partnerships, there should be I'm prejudiced here a little bit. There should be a third bullet here. That should be labor and apprenticeship programs and how you're going to expand apprenticeship opportunities to help with this workforce for this 10-year build-out. So just a suggestion.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you. And, you know, I appreciate all the partnerships in terms of helping entities apply for the funds that are coming through the state. But does the state work within any of these entities to help them apply more competitively to, since we're competing with the other 49 states for these funds? Can you talk about some of the state partners that the state is working with to make sure that we're writing competitive funding opportunities?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Wilson, absolutely we are. And that's a large reason of our partnership with Alaska Municipal League. They are taking the lead to get a team of consultants together to support communities with competitive applications. As a longtime grant writer, I'm familiar with the amount of work that goes into preparing a solid grant document and a benefit cost analysis. And it does take a certain amount of training to be competitive and understand the criteria federally. With AML, we've applied for over $850 million of grants over this past year. We put in 25 applications. A large number of them are from the community with DOT sponsoring them. And we'll continue to do so. It definitely takes resources to provide that support to communities and funding. And the funding for this work isn't federal in nature. We can't apply for, can't use federal funds to support communities with grant writing. So it's a balancing act for our agency, how we can continue to support communities with grant writing, but it is something that we're committed to. We're looking at establishing local government offices and through the rural planning organizations help to empower communities with the grant writing efforts.
Senator Wilson, a follow-up?
Yes, thank you. And I guess my next question to that is, does the DOT have enough resources to continue to help these communities? Because obviously these funds are beneficial to the state. So I guess I just want to make sure that your this year's budget and next year's budget is with that in mind to make sure that DOT does have those funds necessary and resources necessary to help these communities.
Next slide, please.
On the topic of discretionary grants, these are some examples of the grants that have been submitted through our partnership with AML over the past probably 6 months. A number of them are for the Bridge Improvement Program, Rural Ferry Program, which, as we know, has been successful, and are a number of other main infrastructure projects. Some of the challenges with the Rural Ferry Program, we did want to take time to just address this committee about just the timing of how the federal program rollout has impacted us as it pertains to putting out our operating capital budgets. And using this as an example, and I apologize for the small dates, but when EJ was signed into law back in November, it was shortly thereafter, 1 month later, that we had to release the governor's proposed budget. But then the notice of funding opportunity from the Federal Transit Administration for this program wasn't until July of the next year. And we had to submit our grant applications mid-year. That was about 2 months later. So what that means is we were putting in requests in our operating budget for funding based on what we thought the criteria was going to be for this program, but we actually didn't even see the NOFO until 6 months later. And then we had received the notice of the award just at the end of January this year, but then the Gov proposed budget went in December. So we had two cycles of budgets that were submitted really before we had any understanding of where Federal Transit Administration, FTA, where they were leaning with these funding opportunities. So we've been working with OMB and the governor's office and our staff to understand how we can address this with our budget and find the match for these programs.
So we understand that there's been a delay and some complications dealing with the feds on how these funds are, the timing of them, even the amount coming to the state, the allocation within the amounts coming to the state. So we'll work through that issue through the subcommittee process with DOT and most likely have you guys back in front of the full committee talking about those allocations. I know you're going to talk about it a little bit here in the next slide, but in more detail as we flesh out some of these other issues with the Marine Highway in particular, because that's got a big chunk and there's been, like I mentioned, delays, and there may be some directional realignment coming from the committee depending on what's proposed.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. For the record, Catherine Keith, our department would really appreciate that. We expect the next notice of funding opportunity to be released within the next couple months. And so we'll be eager to have those conversations as we look forward to applying for another $200 million, which mm-hmm. we expect to get. So I'll just touch on these awards briefly and happy to go into depth if anyone has additional questions. There has been a lot of press coverage about these particular projects. For the Marine Highway System, we wanted to balance out our capital request by maintaining our existing fleet and then investing in new infrastructure. And so we split the maintenance, the upgrades, and repairs about 50-50 with our ferry terminals, our shoreside infrastructure, and the vessels. And then the other 50% of the capital funding went into new vessels.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a concern for sort of the design, I guess, to anticipating future and service and replacement and design of a new Alaska mainliner at of almost 12% of the cost it would take to build a new ferry. Is that standard and reasonable? And also just want to make sure that the designs are going to meet the current docks and states so we don't have that issue again.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Wilson, yeah, those are good questions. In last year's budget, the legislature had given our department authority to spend $30 million towards the design of a new mainliner. At that point, that dollar amount was there as a percentage of what we would expect the capital cost of this new mainliner to be, which could be potentially $350 million, unless we can find ways to reduce that, which we're looking at. And typically 10% is a pretty accurate design estimate of a capital construction cost program. It's kind of an internal target that we set as an agency, but often don't meet. We're typically closer to 30% of pre-construction costs. So we feel pretty solid about this number, especially because some of the design that has been done for a Tustamina replacement vessel will carry over to this mainliner if that's the design that the new stakeholders are still interested in pursuing. And to your second question, yes, we should make sure all ships, all docks is the tagline of our commissioner as it relates to those topics.
This is a follow-up then. Wouldn't the stakeholder be mostly the state of Alaska in terms of the design specifications? I just don't want to have a stakeholder build something that's not meeting the needs of what DOT is able to handle and operate on a routine basis. So, and like you said, before, we already designed vessels. We know where these vessels are going to be built. So I just thought that price would be a little bit lower since we've already done this before.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Wilson, I will take that to heart and ensure project delivery process is as lean as possible. We do try to reduce those upfront design costs where possible while also producing a design that will really work, and we're eager to do that. We want to make this money go as far as possible. Thank you.
So when you get back to us on the Marine Highway and some of these allocations dealing with the Cross Gulf Ferry, because that's just the first of several that we need to replace, it'd be nice to get a clear timeline for the committee. We've talked for many years here through our budgetary process of replacing the Tuscamina before it ends up on the bottom in the Gulf. And my understanding is that as a captain inspects the hull of that ship before it sails. So we want that ship replaced. But it seems like all we do is talk about it. You know, the keel isn't laid. So, you know, we're going to be interested in a timeline of replacing the ships beyond just the Tuscamina. So we have some, you know, known targets to try to hit, and then allocating these funds to help that. And to Senator Wilson's concern, I think it's it's recognized by DOT that building ferry terminals that the ferry boats ships can't tie to is a little dysfunctional. And we need to have or terminals built where there's no ships to go to them. So we need to do some, make sure we have alignment in the process going forward.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Stebbin. Catherine Keith, for the record. Yes, absolutely. The one development that the committee may be interested in is because of this funding, we are able to add our shipyard. Is RFP will be out soon. We have all of our design team working on this package so that we can deliver this vessel 2027. And we are on track for the Tustamina replacement vessel to be underway in 2027. But along with this one vessel, we are adding in a second vessel for a mainliner so that when we do acquire a shipyard to join our team for this project, they would have the capability of building a second in order to expedite that process and ideally reduce some of the costs. So this is sort of under development as we move forward, but we're looking for ways to get new vessels as soon as possible.
Okay, I think the committee will be interested in trying to see that there's alignment within the new ship so they have similar power plants and all the other infrastructure. I mean, that's so it's not always the low bidder that is in our best interest. So we'll work with the department on moving this forward. So there are one opportunity of a generation or several, couple of generations. We don't mess it up. So we'll get with you on some of the things we need at the full committee, probably through the operating budget subcommittee process. We'll refine it more so it's, and then we'll have a special hearing on just the Marine Highway at the full committee. So everybody understands the magnitude and the timeline of what we're dealing with because it's significant funds and also the match, the requirement of the match, when it's going to be available. When it's going to be needed might not be the same thing. We want to make sure there's alignment on that also. And also, I would like to thank the department for applying for these grants. And it probably came as a surprise that you got all of them. So that's good. Well, we don't want to turn any of them back. So thank you for taking the initiative and going after them. Okay, next slide, please.
For the record, Catherine Keith, yeah, thank you for that acknowledgement. We have a great team committed to improving our marine highway system, and we'll keep working to do so with this committee and others. This is some specifics about the vessels, and I'll touch on this at a high level, that there's $72 million for modernization of current vessels, $68.5 million that goes towards the Tustamina replacement vessel, which is not the complete cost of the project. Design of a new mainliner, which is an $8.5 million award. And then the low no emission ferry was a separate solicitation other than our rural ferry program itself. And that was a $46 million award.
So on this slide, if you can get back to the committee on the Matt Nuska, there's been some concerns with some environmental issues on board, asbestos or other things. Also, maybe some concern with the steel corrosion impact, because there was, from what I heard, interest in not having that ship ever sail again, and that is of concern. Although it helps lower the operating costs, not having ship sail, but that's not in our best interest, say the least. And then on the Columbia also, if you could, and that'll help us with some background. So I'm glad to see them on the list versus on the list for the scrap pile, because I don't think we can replace the mainliners as fast as we can let them get in such disrepair they can't function anymore. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it's always good to hear someone else singing my song. But it would be great to hear back from the department, too, about the flexibility in these. I think the chairman is exactly right about keeping some of the vessels that can't make their runs right now run until they're replaced. My understanding is that more than a third of that top award is for a vessel that can make all its runs, doesn't need any work. But it'll double her operating cost on crewing, which is a funny way to use once in a generation money.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, These are really excellent questions, and we're happy to get back to the committee with more detailed responses. We are meeting with Federal Transit Administration this week to talk through some of these. So we do hope that there can be some flexibility in how we've applied. We applied for a bundle of projects for modernization. And while we listed specific examples, certainly there's been developments over the past months that may inform future decision making. And a lot of these decisions are very relevant right now and underway with the Matanuska and Columbia both, you know, balancing our upfront investment right now with the lifespan of the vessel and balancing that with the need to replace that with new vessels is a great discussion point.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Next slide, please.
And the same holds true for our ferry terminal awards. We did get $45.5 million for rural communities, including Chiniga, Tetitlet, Cordova, Pelican, and a project in Auk Bay. With these awards, the Prince William Sound communities of Tetitlet, Chiniga, and Cordova had already received an award just the month prior. So now there's double funding for those communities. So that is another discussion point with Federal Transit Administration as to the flexibility of those funds to move it to other needs across the system. And we can update the committee on those developments.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are other infrastructure ferry docks in Western Alaska. So they're all in pristine condition and don't need to be modernized. Or I'm talking about Kodiak on Alaska and all those out there. It seems to me that when I was out on Alaska, there was needs for modernization as well. And what are the plans for those facilities?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we do annual infrastructure inspections of all of our ferry terminal facilities, whether we go to that, whether we own them or not. And so we do have a fairly good listing of the state of the health of all of those improvements. We have a number of them that are underway that just didn't have grant funding, but that are under design. And I can get you a complete list of those along the Aleutian chain and their status. If there are projects that would be better suited for construction or repair, then we would like to have them on the list. So we have a number of them. Yeah, and we do understand. Thank you for Kodiak, that maybe the dock facility is sufficient, but the terminal itself is in need of significant improvements. And so we have been having conversations with Kodiak about their building for the terminal too.
If you can get back to the committee on the status of those, I think the chairman of the capital budget would take an interest in that. Senator Hoffman. Next slide, please.
And for the record, Catherine Keith. This slide is on organizational excellence. And while this may seem a bit fluffy to talk about and with Senate Finance, it is a bit relevant in that in order to execute this tremendous capital program that we have in front of us, it does require us as an agency to perform at our best. And that includes working on things such as workforce development and training, resources, which includes building partnerships, looking at innovative ways to do things. Just because we've done it the same way over the past 20 years, maybe we need to do it differently now. To Senator Keel's remarks earlier, across our agency, we are feeling a lot of pressure to get projects ready and shovel ready so that we don't miss out on opportunities. These discretionary grant opportunities, for example, they are only within 5 years, and we may have a longer period of time to work on and complete those projects, but we do have to have projects ready and competitive now in order to increase the funds that are available for our state. So there's a lot of that FOMO, fear of missing out. So this organizational excellence is something that we've been working across for the past year, and we have teams that are working on different aspects of this. And project delivery is a very relevant one where we're looking at ways to expedite our project delivery processes so that we can more quickly address the needs of Alaskans with the money we have. And the way that we've been running projects historically has been pretty regimented. And so we're trying to just open up the box on what's possible as an agency, and we can talk more about that if anybody's interested.
Okay, next slide.
Now, one example of how we're using this information is through understanding the amount of construction workers that's needed for transportation projects. This slide gets into the weeds a little bit, but it's for what we're proposing in the 2023 construction season based on what we have on our tentative advertising list at our agency. And we have a program that's called AshToWare, and we use certified payroll, and we have data that goes back to 2021. It's not a significant amount of data, but we're able to look at some generalized job classes. And there's many more than this in any construction job, but at a high level, you can see just the amount of workers that are needed even for this year, and that's just our agency. So when we look at the other things that Mr. Anderson is aware of and the magnitude of workers that were needed, you know, we have a workforce crunch that, you know, we're working on as an agency. There is, through this year's IIJA, new eligibilities that allow for 100% federal eligibility on anything related to workforce and training. This wasn't here last year, and then so our agency looks forward to figuring out how we can support people with their CDLs. We can bring in people from rural communities and pay for their time, their travel. We can provide daycare support. We can offer stipends, just of many costs which are typically not considered eligible are with the update in the guidance. So we're looking at this and aware of this as a concern both for our own staffing and also our private industry construction.
Okay, on this subject, could you get with Senator Bishop? He's taking a look at workforce development, has been the last few years. Make sure he has the data on those two data sets, and maybe we can get a forecast for the next couple of years so we have a good idea as possible on what the workforce needs are going to be, because we are concerned that we don't have the people power and the training, even to train up the people if we had them. So we'll be working on that and bringing that information back to the full committee. Senator Wilson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I think that was similar to my question here, is what are the deltas in these areas that we currently have and that we may need would be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll be looking for gaposis on that and see how we can fill it with training programs or what have you. I know we spent some time on that the last couple of years. I think we need to do maybe a little more work with the administration so they understand why we're recommending what we're recommending in the budget to put our people to work. So we'll work with DOT on that. And I do appreciate the little pie chart here. I think it's helpful when we talk about the capital budget and how we're allocating projects vertical or horizontal around the state. Any other questions, Senator Bishop, and then Senator Hoffman?
I just thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to give a shout out to DOT a couple slides back, but I'll ask you to go back there. But I just again want to just commend the department on the caliber of people that we have in the department. And just as late as last year in your August true up, we brought in, I think, about $87 million back to the state. And that is other states, if they don't spend all their FHWA funds, DOT has always managed to go in there and get their fair share. But this year it was, I think, between 82 and 87 million. They can correct me if I'm wrong, but that just leads the credence to the caliber of people that we have in our department. Thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We addressed ports and harbors, but there was nothing in this packet for the Alaska port. And I'm wondering if the department could give a report on that and on a higher view. If this is truly the Alaska port, is it best to be managed by the municipality of Anchorage, or is it better managed and operated by the state of Alaska, since it has broad services to the whole state. Why is Anchorage burdened with that responsibility and not having the state of Alaska having that responsibility? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. You can get back with Senator Hoffman on that, or the committee, and we'll disperse it out, and we'll probably have a conversation on that subject matter sometime in the future, before May, not too far in the future. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Keith, I just was having a question on slide 12, which has to do with ice roads. I was wondering, you had a $2 million budget that was put in there. How does that compare to years before?
Yeah, through the chair to Senator Olson. As this is a new program, so it's substantially higher than what we've done previously. The way that we funded ice roads before was through line item allocations that go specifically to communities for projects, as I understand. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And this magnifies it tremendously. This year, as I understand it, we not only have this program, but we also have separate allocations which have gone back to communities previously, for example, the North Osage Borough, which may still receive that funding in addition to what is available through this program.
So with global warming, do you anticipate there's going to be more funds available or less funds available now that the ice is coming in later in the rivers and staying not as long as it used to, but still the traffic has been increasing because of the vehicles that are in the villages now?
Yeah, through the chair to Senator Olson, that's a very good question. We have the university had been working on a study about best practices for safe construction of ice roads. There are certainly times when we have loaders out there across a state that have gone through, and thankfully people haven't been hurt, but there are real risks involved, and we just want to make sure that we are constructing these safely, and we do have a good team working on that. But regarding whether or not the funding would go up or down just because of our shortened window, as an agency, I don't expect that that's going to be the driving factor, because even if we have an ice road available for a couple weeks, people are going to they're going to take advantage of that, and they're going to be hauling stuff back and forth where possible.
Last question, Mr. Chairman. It has to do with the Diomede ice runway. Is the DOT still putting an ice runway in out there? And where do those funds come from?
Through the chair to Senator Olson, I'm going to have to get back to you on that.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I don't know the answer.
That's fine. You can get back to us on that. We'll have a whole list of questions for the airport division, and we'll make sure that that gets answered, Senator Olson. We have other questions from the presentation today. Yeah, I'd like to go ahead and thank DOT, particularly Catherine Keith, new deputy commissioner. She'll be a face in front of the committee many times, I think, over the next couple of months as we work through these issues. I think you did a good job walking through the presentation with the committee today. And Mr. Mike Anderson, we look forward to also working with you on the infrastructure investment, as the infrastructure investment coordinator, and certainly look forward to your team expanding beyond the one-man band. We like a choir, you know, and we'll work with you as far as trying to get these funds sorted out and how we get them in the budgets and move the state forward. So with that, again, thanks, DOT, for the meeting today, the presentation. And again, thank you for applying for those grants. It probably surprised your boss's boss that you got them all, because now the governor gets a bill for match money, which is good from our perspective, and we'll work that in the budget with you guys. So that is something that the department should be very proud of. Tomorrow, we're going to have Callan and Associates, which is the consultant for the permanent fund, also the consultant for a retirement system. But the main focus tomorrow will be on capital markets, historic and expectations going forward, rates of return, those type of things, asset allocation questions, and tying it into the permanent fund sustainability, which really targets down to the earnings reserve. We've had some testimony here that the earnings reserve is 90% in illiquid assets. It catches our attention because that's the funds out of the permanent fund that we use for our dividends and for supporting core state services. So those will be the subject matter tomorrow. And I would expect some members then will have asset allocation and market questions that will not only roll into to the retirement system of TERS and PERS, but also power cost equalization and that portfolio, which was caught in the downdraft of this last market move down last year. So we expect an interesting and lively meeting tomorrow. We'll see everybody tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. We are adjourned at 10:40 a.m. We're adjourned.